in even private education, and maybe even more broadly. So there's a lot of damage that even a 6-3 majority is likely to do.
And expected to take up a transgender case?
Possibly. There is a transgender case that they could take up out of Virginia that could do a lot of damage there as well. Again, we're seeing what a 6-3 court can do. A 7-2 court, which would also preserve a conservative majority for many years, maybe decades, can do a lot more damage across our society.
Well, I want to thank you all so much for being with us. Adam Cohen, writer and author of Supreme Inequality, The Supreme Court's 50-Year Battle for a More Unjust America. We'll link to your piece in The Atlantic, Justice Breyer's Legacy-Defining Decision. And I want to thank Camila Chavez, executive director of the Dolores Huerta Foundation, daughter of Dolores Huerta and niece of Cesar Chavez. That does it for the show. If you'd like to sign up for our daily digest, send the word democracy. Now, one word, no space. Text it to 66866. Democracy Now! To 66866. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Carla Wills, Tammy Warren.
You're listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM. The time is 7:59 a.m. Next up is More Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste.
Good morning, good morning. You are listening to your Community Connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, Oregon, White Sands, Washington, along the Columbia River Gorge, and the Willamette River Valley. It is 104.3 KBOO.FM, everywhere else. Good morning again. This is More Talk Radio. I am here with my co-host, Cecil Prescott. Good morning, Cecil.
Good morning, Celeste.
And I am Celeste Carey. I guess I would call myself Cecil's cohort in conversation. There we go. So how you doing with this heat? You hanging tough?
I am hanging in, hoping everyone else is finding places to be cool and finding ways not to become overheated. So don't move around too much. Have your water with you and continue to be safe.
You know, I want to add something. My brother keeps bugging me about this, and so, you know, I'll be good and pass it on. He keeps talking about food safety. And he says, don't forget about food safety. Normally, you know, we might leave some food out for a while. And protein foods especially do not like all this heat. So don't leave your food out too long. Okay, that's our moment. That's our, what do we call it, public service announcement? Yeah.
Public service announcement.
Okay. So,
You mean I shouldn't leave my potato salad, chicken potato salad out?
No, just like I'm not going to leave my Dungeness crab double eggs out.
Right.
I mean, not unless I'm trying to attain some strange kind of enlightenment that comes through a dose of ptomaine poisoning. No, I don't recommend it.
So it seems to my end there's a lot of static. When you speak, are you moving things around? Or?
I'm moving my lips.
Oh, okay.
I just like the I guess like the Tin Man, maybe I didn't put enough oil on myself. But, you know, hey, now this is a cultural thing, okay? By folks who know all about not having ashy skin, they know that in the summer, however, you might want to wait a moment before you apply any moisturizer because it will make you perspire profusely. So maybe I'm just a little ashy and oily because I'm not trying to sweat.
Wow.
Oh, gosh. Okay, I think I'm going to quit while I'm ahead. I'm just going to stop. So anyway, that's some levity coming into something that is a sobering situation. There is no other way I could think of to describe it because it deserves gravity. It deserves gravity on a number of fronts. One, because it is an examination of the consequences, the side, the collateral damage, if you will, of a life taken unjustly. And then it's an examination of human attempts at rendering justice. And Cecil and I wanted to talk with you today about your reaction to the Derek Chauvin sentencing. And this is one of the most galvanizing series of events that the American, well, I should say recent American history has experienced and has witnessed. The murder and death of George Floyd, and I separate those two acts because there is his death and how it affected his family and his close circle. And then it's the fact that that was not a natural death, i.e. it was a murder, that has even other and broader implications. But the murder and death of George Floyd created a response worldwide and a deeply held conviction was unfortunately validated, and that is that being black in this country does not carry any appreciable significance to the culture of this country. And so we wanted to try to get some conversation going to kind of help people find the right words to either express grief, express a sense of outrage, express a thought of justice, just express so that we don't have a pent-up emotional dam springing forth into some spasm of pain or frustration or anger. We got enough of that possibly in the future. You know, but most definitely we've had it in the past, and this is a season of remembering as it is. I mean, his death not only signified how little progress has been made in respecting that black lives matter. I mean, if all lives matter, then why don't black lives? Why is it that black lives seem not to matter when these people want to chant all lives matter? But more importantly, it's getting at the root of what civilization is supposed to be and what justice is supposed to be. And I'm not going to answer those questions. What I want to do instead is speak with listeners, speak with callers, and just share our observations about those things, what the sentencing means to you, just your thoughts, and just try to broach this subject in some way that keeps conversation happening instead of more chaos. And so, you know, the phone number to engage is 503-231 8187. And we welcome your calls. And you know the rules. The house rules are be respectful. You don't have to agree. You know, if you're going to share some information, make sure you have sources. And alternative facts are not welcome. It could be a different point of view based in reality, but alternative facts, no. You know, and again, I did say you don't have to agree with us, but alternative facts means, you know, don't spread lies, rumors, and specious. We got enough challenges as human beings as it is. Go ahead, Cecil.
One of the facts, as people prepare to call, is that on Friday, Derek Chauvin was sentenced to 22 and a half years in prison. Under Minnesota law, Chauvin will have to serve 2/3 of his sentence or 15 years, and he will be eligible for supervised release for the remaining 7.5 years. Now, some people are criticizing the decision, but also note that the sentence exceeds the Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines range of 10 years and 8 months to 15 years for the crime. So his sentence could have been for 30 years. It exceeded the sentencing guideline, and the judge sentenced him to 22 and a half years, and he may be out out of prison and on supervised release after 15 years. So those are some of the basis on which we can have our discussion. Now, the judge said that he made an emphasis, Judge Peter Cahill, he made an emphasis that his sentence was not based on emotion or public reaction or public opinion, and he wanted to acknowledge the quote, deep pain, deep and tremendous pain that all the families are feeling, especially the Floyd family. We'd also like to note that at this sentencing, Derek Chauvin's mother spoke, and spoke as a mother would in terms of wanting her son not to be sentenced too harshly, and made a point that her son is not a racist. Also speaking on tape was Mr. Floyd's young daughter, who spoke about how she missed her father. So those are some of the things that some of those more intimately connected to the case, but we're wondering about how other people are reacting to the sentences, whether or not it is a just sentence in terms of what he was convicted of, and just taking a temperature check. So again, as Celeste reminded us, our phone numbers are 503-231-8187. Your response and reaction to the Derek Chauvin's sentencing of after he was convicted of the murder of George Floyd.
You're listening to Your Community Connection, KBLO Portland, 90.7 GM City. And, you know, let's start with just a conversation about that term that he's been sentenced in, the amount of years. And you mentioned that Judge Cahill said this had been a carefully deliberated sentencing, that it was not based on emotion or public sentiment, but that it was based on facts and the facts surrounding the action and circumstances of the case. And one of those, and I'm paraphrasing it because right now my mind just kind of dropped the verbal ball, so to speak, on it. It was a serious and egregious breach of public trust. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of a paraphrasing of the way Judge Cahill put it. But basically, there was nothing even remotely like protected serve in this dynamic. And that's one reason why you're seeing such a large sentence, a large amount of years. And I don't know if that has really sunk into a lot of people how important that that one phrase is, you know, a breach of public trust. If we cannot trust these officers to be able to have not only a higher degree of control, emotional control, physical control, moral presence through the training that they're supposed to get, through the vetting of their personality and their psychology, how are we going to maintain any idea of what justice is, you know, of what being each other's keeper is? And so I'm wondering how people feel about that. Now, it was said that it was said that this is the, I think, the longest sentence imposed on any former police officer that's ever happened in, I think, Minnesota. It may be, I don't think it's in the U.S. I'm going to do my quick research here to find out. But it's also been said, well, it had to be an unusual sentencing because there was nothing typical about Floyd's involvement and, Derek Chauvin's involvement in George Floyd's death. And so that is an attempt to kind of balance the scales and achieve justice. And I'm really curious, what's your thoughts on that, Cecil? Or do you want to share your thoughts? Let's put it that way.
Yeah, definitely. You know, what is the price of a life? What is the price of black lives? The fact is that since the time that black people were brought into chains into this country, black lives have never been valued by the larger society. The fact that Derek Chauvin was able, and you know, we all witnessed the video of his slow and torture and murder of Mr. Floyd. With a look on his face, for me, that seems as if I don't care how you feel. I think it's symbolic of how the society has had its knee on black, brown, and indigenous people for centuries. The fact that lives, black and brown lives, are not valued is something that we need to examine and come to a reckoning. So much has been said in the last year about we have reached a moment of racial reckoning in our nation. Well, perhaps for a season, but until we are able to view how our society is established for who has the power, look at the iniquities in our society. Indigenous black and brown people will continue to have the knee of injustice on their necks. And so while what's the right word? Pleased, satisfied, angry over the sentencing, I'm also aware of, unless we can look at the systemic roots of our society and how we have established society, justice, however we want to see it or define it, remain elusive until we come to a recognition of who we are and come to some agreement of where we want to go. So perhaps this is a moment, an opportunity on that slow curve, bend towards justice that we are establishing. But we'll see. So those are some of my immediate thoughts.
We want to hear yours, and we know this could be a difficult subject, and maybe you weren't prepared to talk about something like this that's difficult on such a hot day. I wish life was a bit more fortuitous in how it deals out difficult subjects, but it's not. We do want to encourage you, however, to, you know, share your thoughts, share your conversation, maybe pick up some conversational tips in how you can bring this forward. The phone number is 503-231-8187, and again, 503-231-8187. You know, I was listening to you talk, and so many thoughts went through my mind from when you said black lives have no value, and I didn't allow myself to interrupt. I held my tongue because I wanted to say, well, our lives have value, but only as property, you know, as chattel. And that's a sad state, you know. And then talking about a paraphrase of, I think it was Martin Luther King Jr. saying, the slow arc towards justice. And one of the things that I think fatigues people is that sometimes justice involves somebody else losing their life. And I wonder if that has had any effect on people. You and I were sharing the other day when we were, you know, sorting through topics, and I was saying, on one hand, I could see people not wanting to talk about this because it is about death and dying and justice. And then on the other hand, I could see some people maybe not wanting to talk about this because, you know, once again, those two brown people are talking about race. Is it ever not about race? And I'm trying to find ways to help my especially my white friends and colleagues and people I meet understand that in this country, it's always about race. It's hardly never about race because it's an effective tool in keeping us separated. And if you don't believe me, look at how trying to get this country to recognize that it was built with slave labor, and just teach that truth, how it's got people really foaming at the mouth behind critical race theory and its application and its dissemination, and it's being taught in schools, you know. And one key thing about critical race theory that's really important is it's not accusing those of us who exist in this time and space right now in 2021, June 28th, of slavery. But what it is saying is that those of us who exist in this time and place in this country have benefited from the dynamic and the institution of slavery, and stop acting like that this country didn't have its very legal and judicial system built on that foundation.
Robbie's online.
Okay, good. And so, you know, with that in mind, it's hard not to recognize on a daily basis how much race is in our face. And that pun was intended. We have a caller online. So thank you for calling and go straight to the call. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I just wanted to bring up, in regards to the verdict, it's like I'm an abolitionist, you know, so it's ironic for me to be like, oh, thank God he's in jail or prison, because I don't really believe that's the type of society we should be having, this kind of that the private prison industry thrives off of, you know, incarcerated people. But that being said, it's like, you know, when we look at what's happened, it's like what I see is breadcrumbs. I see show. It's like, oh, okay, they arrested, you know, the one cop. You know, meanwhile, Joe Biden has quadrupled the police spending. There's, you know, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, what systemically has changed is nothing. But there's, in regards to the problem, right, with the police enforcement, and it's like, so it's like, yeah, they throw, you know, they'll throw the one person under the bus and make us feel better, but then they're not addressing the problem at the root cause.
Yes.
Yeah, just, that was kind of my thought on that. Go ahead.
No, I appreciate how you began by stating of the mixed emotions you have as an abolitionist and talking about the injustice system that we have and the need to abolish the way we do policing and look critically at our criminal justice system and the prison system. Nevertheless, at the same time, how do we respond to this attempt, maybe minor attempt, to establish some modicum of justice? And if we look at this only as, you know, the solution for all and do not ponder, wrestle with the critical questions of our policing and our criminal justice system and our prison system, I don't think we will get to real radical solutions or change.
Yeah. I had one last point, and I'll take the answers off the air. But one thing I've noticed is it's and I see it a lot. It's this notion where justice can be replaced by revenge at certain times, which is just something that I always keep in my mind. But speaking of like the justice part, right? He gets 22 years, and meanwhile, there's still people. There's low level drug offenders locked up for 40. So I don't, yeah. You know what I mean? There's not much justice in that, but. Yeah, yeah, that's all my thoughts. Thank you for talking about this, because it's important stuff for sure.
Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you for your call. And we welcome your call as well at 503-231-8187. This is More Talk Radio with Cecil and myself, Celeste, here on your Community Connection, KBLO Portland. And we're coming in strong in White Salmon at 91.9 and Philomath, Oregon at 104.3. You know, who is it that said the quality of justice, or is it mercy? The quality of mercy is not strained. I should look that up real quick. You know, I appreciate what Robbie said about there being a difference between justice and revenge. And what I really want to be careful of is not letting a root of frustration or bitterness or anger or revenge creep into me personally and my communications and my dealing about this, and try to get focused on the fact that we're trying as imperfect vessels to find something like justice for the taking of another human life. And I found it. So that's from The Merchant of Venice. Act 4, Scene 3 from Shakespeare, The Quality of Mercy is not strained. It droppeth as a gentle rain from heaven upon the place beneath. And I would like to think that we could hold mercy and justice in our hearts as human beings. You know, we have a hard time trying to decide, you know, if it's chocolate or peanut butter, you know, as human beings, you know. Tastes great, less filling. You know, we want to argue at the drop of a hat. But this is one of those deeper truths, one of those higher concepts that we're supposed to ascribe and aspire to. So I'm looking at this and I'm just thinking, okay, how do you balance this? And one reason it's really important to strike this balance, and callers, you know, call me up and tell me what you think about this, is because of its volatility, because of the tinderbox of emotions and frustrations and hatred that we have in our hearts as human beings. I mean, if you don't believe it, you know, if you don't believe it, just think about how we have people. Look, in Florida, a law was just signed that said that students and university professors have to reveal their political leanings. Now, how volatile is that? How dangerous is that? You know, here in the United States, we had the era of McCarthyism. How volatile and how dangerous was that? And so we want to try to hold these ideas of mercy and justice in our hearts because we're not perfect, because we are given to violence, because we are given to pettiness. And so, I don't know, let me just throw that out there as we seek to find that balance in our discussion today and, you know, and moving forward. Let's go to our caller. Good morning, you're on there.
Yes. You said quite a bit just then, but when you first opened the show, you actually said some different issues that I actually wanted to kind of address, like, you know, kind of from a big picture, considering
the
aftermath of this and how it I relate to it. I'm dating myself. I'm like 61, and I remember when we had a riot in MLK. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I remember there was a riot in MLK, and that was after, I can't remember, it was after King died or Malcolm X, but I was very young, and I felt really taken care of by the people. They were, like, burning up places in the neighborhood. This happened, actually, in Portland, the Panthers. As a child, I felt very protected. There was a high degree of morale in the community and stuff. So all these adults that were going and doing these things as a child, I probably was 6 or 7, I felt like they were taking care of me. Now, the reason I bring that up is because a lot of the pictures that we saw in the newspaper, there was a Black Panther newspaper, and they showed Black people clinging on the light. They showed these policemen, they actually had them on handcuffs as if they had one fish, or, you know, they were, like, you know, showing off their fish. And we found out later, as I got older, that that was a part of the COINTELPRO movement to introduce low morale into the community. Now, I think that's an understatement at this juncture in terms of all these murders, and in terms of, you know, in terms of the, it took the whole world to burn up before we got a measly conviction like this. So if it wasn't the fact that information wasn't being so propagated as in the technological times we're living in, a lot of people would have been slowly to understanding what's going on. So what we're seeing now is a complicit effort at, you know, trying to weaponize information, because it's not just necessarily about Black people. As we here in America, as we saw as a result of that, there are black people that were pained all over the world. So this is no more than just a racial thing, to, and the fact that I can codify what I say about it just so I won't necessarily say black as a politician. I can just demonize everybody who I don't like, and I can propagate information to create initiatives to get you to vote against the rights of those people. So what I'm seeing is that a lot of these whites are just seeing this as a transactional passe rather than, you know, than just the human rights that and the terrorism that are being focused on black people in this nation and in the world. And that's all I have to say.
Could you say a little bit more about your analysis, transactional analysis you just mentioned?
Well, what I mean by that is that, like, for instance, I remember during apartheid, a lot of people were, you know, they were talking about when they got mindset about apartheid. But a lot of those, a lot of the commentaries were based on saying, well, why complain about it? It works. It's the economics. It's working. So that's why let me know how people view a moral issue. They view it as a transaction, you know. That's what I mean by that. Instead of the fact that, you know, I'm the one, I suffer as a black person from this. I don't view it as a transaction. I view it as an issue of morality, you know. But most white people see that as a transaction. And you probably got part of the reasons, I think a lot of it is the assault on black history. People call it critical race theory, but I remember during the time, it was around the 70s, that it seemed like a romantic period for the world to some degree, because people seemed like they were trying to coalesce in some degree, albeit they give us the so-called blaxploitation movies and stuff. But there was a certain kind of, you know, I think that the world was kind of coming into a sense of reckoning to a degree. Oh, they had to quit that. They had to stop that quick. You know, because if it meant miscegenation on a large scale, no, they weren't going to have that. You know, so you got to implement some kind of way to shut that type of progress. I think a lot of it has a lot to do with black history as well. I missed a bunch of other things, but I know I only got so much time on this.
Well, you know,
I said a lot of things.
And that's one of the reasons why we wanted to have this conversation today. I think you summed it up when you said, "I want to say a lot of things." There are a lot of us who want to say a lot of things, and just to touch upon the juxtaposition of a violent response like a riot making a young black male child feel safe. And there are a lot of people out here who won't understand that. But the best way I can describe it and describe the way race affects people of color, and most specifically black people, is that growing up in America, black parents have to teach their kids about racism and how dangerous it is. This is not like you'll burn your hand if you put it in fire or don't pet strange dogs. This is more like there's nothing you can do that's going to make you safe, but still try to be as nice as you can be, as polite as you can be, as honest as you can be, as good as you can be, so that maybe that white monster of racism won't attack you and hurt you or kill you. And what's worse is then the parent has to say to the child, "I can't protect you because the same thing happened to me and my parents couldn't save me and I can't save myself from that monster." Imagine how that would affect you if you grew up, and by you I mean you all who are listening who are not black. Imagine how you would feel growing up under that kind of dynamic and what it does to your mind. And that's one of the things that I try to get people to see. You know, when people say all lives matter, I want to ask them, okay, do you really mean that? Because if you really mean that, then you understand why we're saying black lives should matter, because it seems like all lives matter but black lives. And then number two, ask them, if all lives matter, would you be willing to be black in America?
That's interesting. And a lot of times people say, okay, well, that's interesting. You say that a lot of people say, well, I want to be blessed. Well, let them do it for a day. I say let you do it for maybe a year, year and a half. Then that way, then you address the vacations that you try to, you know, that you try to go on. Just about almost, you know, that's enough, an anniversary for you to really have a feeling as to what you try to plan and how it may be affected by this. So that right there shows the complicity beyond just the streets engaging us. I mean, beyond just the police and the negative information engaging us out in the streets, now we got a complicit era of jobs or people that are trying to lift themselves out of poverty. We got all these complicit elements that go along with it, you know.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Well, thank you for your call and for the multitude of points you raised, because it helps us deepen the conversation, man, so people understand why, as black people, we're still talking about race.
Celeste, we're getting a bad echo problem here at the studio. Can you, if you turn down your volume on your end, it should help.
Okay, I'll try that and see if that helps. Thanks. Thank you to Ty, our engineer. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your Community Connection, KBOO, Portland. One thing I do want to tell people who are enduring this bad echo, with us trying to reopen the station as we get closer to that that safe rate of vaccination, you will find that the talk strip will be one of the first segments of programming that will be back live. Let me say this right. I got to say it to my unsung heroes. Jenna and Adam are working very hard to get the HVAC system running and up to speed so that it meets all requirements to keep people safe, you know, and that's been one of our biggest stumbling blocks. So I just want to get a big shout out to Jenna and to Adam. Now, back to the case at hand. I can't even begin to unpack everything that we just shared with the caller, because he was speaking truth to situation. I mean everything he said plus more, like he said, you know, so much more. There's not enough time for me to tell how, you know, my skin color has affected me in this country, because nobody wants to hear 67 years worth of it, you know. But those of us who have gone through it know what it's like. I watched an interview yesterday of James Baldwin in his home with his family.
Oh, yeah.
And he was talking to a white woman reporter about how when he was 7 and now he's 47, there has been no appreciable change. And the situation is not any different for him than it is for me or for my grandsons or my great-grands. You know, I don't know what kind of world I'm leaving them, and we're trying our best, but the transactional nature of justice as it is implemented here in the United States is an unfortunate and doomed dynamic, because it doesn't give me any hope, and it doesn't bode well for the rest of the country either, you know, because it's an unequal transaction. It shouldn't even be a transaction.
James is on the line.
Okay. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. The phone number is 503-231-8187. And I believe you said Jamie. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I am well. How about yourself?
I'm doing all right, trying to stay clean.
All right.
Yeah. In terms of Derek Chauvin, I mean, you know, I have no hope in the conviction actually sticking. I think, while I am while it sounds nice, I mean, we have to understand, and I apologize if I might be reiterating or repeating any points. You know, this is a concession given because they know what the climate is like right now, socially. So they keep saying it's justice for George Floyd. No, that's accountability for his murder. Justice is bigger. You know, you're talking about, you know, a conviction isn't transformative. A conviction is correctional. But if we're talking about justice, we're talking about giving. You know, we're talking about reparations. We're talking about restoration of humanity. You know, and this government has proven time and time again that it is not willing to give it. So, in my analysis, we as indigenous, Chicano, Black, the people who have been here and who have suffered the most under the settler colonial regime, we have to decide whether this is worth saving. You know, all this talk about reform, all this talk about that, they've already tried reform. Even when they do give reform, such as the New Deal still screwed sharecroppers, Black sharecroppers. The New Deal still screwed indigenous people. You know, people, you know, there's a lot of people out there, like, you know, and I've been, you know, like, you know, like, for instance, Chris Hedges and Cornel West, as much as I love them, and they do look really, they have pretty salient analysis of the situation. They look to the New Deal reforms of the 30s. You know, Cornel West likes to talk about Reconstruction. You know, the New Deal was given as a concession to white people to keep revolution from happening. But even those reforms still screwed Black and Brown. You know, Reconstruction was given as a concession because there was an army big enough in the South at the time of the Civil War to overtake the settler colonial regime. So we have to stop talking about reforms because reforms are only preserving the system that is in place. This country is projected to lose its hegemony in the world by 2030. It's already sealed. China's taking over. You know, the age of America is pretty much done. So we as Black and Brown folks have to decide if we're going to stand with the system that has consistently showed us that our humanity doesn't matter, or we're going to start thinking about new coalitions and new things, I'm talking new political parties, not political parties that are an alternative to Republicans or Democrats, but political parties that are an alternative to settler colonialism. So,
well, I can't argue with you, and I can say that, you know, that hill might be steeper than it needs to be. One of the reasons that the hill is steeper than it needs to be is to get people to really be able to spend time on thinking about political needs, ideologies, alignments, means that they have a little bit of spare time. And with our current economic climate, even though people are quitting jobs in droves, you also have people who don't have. And those are the vast majority of us. And so we're scrabbling just to get, you know, food in the mouth, you know, and shelter.
Oh, no, I absolutely understand. I hear where you're coming from. That is not lost on me. I absolutely understand.
Yeah. But what I want to focus on is how do we get enough breathing room to even think about this? And again, we don't have enough time to even discuss this, which is a point you brought up, and that is, you know, looking at the transactional analysis and the transactional nature of justice. I kind of agree with you. I feel this performative energy coming out of this hole. thing. And that is, I'm saying that with respect to the Floyd family, because I don't know what they feel. I know what we've been told they said, but I don't know what they feel or what they think about this. And I don't want to disrespect their loss by putting my analysis and my perception on it. But I just feel like this is performative. And okay,
and here's what I'll say.
Let me just say it in plain English. Folks, I don't know that this really counts for anything. And I hate that I have to look at the taking of another person's life as some type of satisfaction for justice. But I hear what you're saying.
You know, and that's what I'm saying. Like, but here's the thing. Like, I think we can talk about that. You know, that those things can exist. You know, concurrently. You know, the Floyd family deserved that conviction because his life. You know, because George Floyd's life mattered. But at the same time, it's also understanding that while that is good for the Floyd family, what are we? You know, we have to think about the next George Floyd, the next Camille Rice, the next Sandra Bland, because. You know, because this is not going to stop. You know, we have to stop. And I get that people are busy, and I get that people need to take care of their families, but at the same time, we've got so many crises going on. And I'm not saying that, you know, everybody has, I'm just saying that we have to start thinking as you know, black and brown people about something that is. That goes against the regime itself, because I mean we're basically at a point where we're just being punched in the corner. You know, we have so many forces bearing down on us. You know, my friend Thomas always said, you know, when America has the cold, you know, black folks have the flu. That's where we're at right now. You know, so I mean, my point is that Joe Biden only looks good in comparison to Trump. And Joe Biden is already proving himself to be he's putting the performative actions of bipartisanship over actually doing systemic reforms. They want to compare him to FDR because of where we're at, but we don't even have the type of left movements to even force FDR to do what he did, because FDR wouldn't have done it on his own. FDR is a capitalist, just like the people that he took the money from, but he understood enough that the force of pressure was enough to make him do something. But like I said, even those reforms only preserve the settler class. Everybody else got. So I'm just saying that, you know, we're basically in an abusive relationship right now. And so we have to decide,
right.
You know, are we done being abusive? I mean,
let's thank you for that, because we'll go off on another tangent, I know, because you're bringing up good points. Yeah. And thank you so much for your call.
Excellent. No, I was listening and trying to understand the roles the caller were leading us, and all valid points.
You are listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the city, 91.9 in the gorge, 104.3 in the valley, and KBOO.FM on the web worldwide. We still have some time for your call. Where my sisters at? Where my aunties and mamas and grandmamas, you know, daughters? Where y'all at? Weigh in, you know, because not only do they say that women are the culture bearers in a society, but sometimes we are the heart. And I'm curious, you know, what Derek's mom said is what any mother would say, and that's the way you started out. You prefaced, you know, her saying that her son is not a racist. And it's mothers who very often frame the conversations about life and mercy. And then just as George Floyd's daughter framed a perception of his humanity by saying she misses her father helping her brush her teeth at night, you know, and it's really important for us to look at this whole situation as deeply as possible, as broadly as possible. Deep, I mean, by trying to connect and have empathy and see humanity on both sides, but broad because the mere fact that we've had this ongoing discussion speaks to the unfortunate, lasting, enduring quality of oppression, and especially racial oppression in this country that does not want to admit that it's based on and found its strength in racism and ownership of another person. And so we broke so many subjects. You've been real quiet today.
Sometimes these issues come up and it just causes me to pause and reflect. And I appreciate the discussion, the thoughts that people had to say, and yeah, sometimes I just have to sit with it.
Yeah.
Francis is on.
Okay, thank you, Todd. Good morning, Francis.
Hi, I have agreed with so many of your callers today. I just wanted to say that yes, it is probably the most reason why people have hypertension is having to teach your children to maintain some decorum and respect, and meanwhile being totally concerned that they will not be respected in encounters they may have with law enforcement. When I watched that sentencing, I thought, well, there's another cog in the wheel for the prison industry, and that Mr. Chauvin looked like just another convict with his head shaved and everything. And I thought about visiting my husband in the penitentiary and seeing so many families coming in and out to visit loved ones. And there's a lot of white guys who call themselves Aryan brothers who are just dismissed like everybody else. I thought about restorative justice and what that means, and that we don't practice it at all. And one thing that struck me was when Mr. Floyd's brother asked why. He wanted to ask Derek Chauvin why. It would be wonderful if they would have that conversation. But I don't know that nothing has been restored, nothing has been settled. You know, just another person went to prison, and there's so many people in prison now that do not need to even be there and should not be there. What got accomplished? I'm not quite sure. At least someone was brought to "quote unquote justice" for something that should have never happened in the first place. But that system has not been brought to justice. It has not been changed. It has not been corrected at all. And so here we are.
You know, I like what you said about restorative justice, because
teaching the children.
If it was truly restorative, Derek would shuffle off a lot of this space in this whole issue, this whole situation, by pledging himself to become the family member that he took away. I mean, that's restoring. He goes in and he becomes the hands and the feet for that family that were George, that he took away. You know, but fat chance that that's going to happen.
Nothing got restored.
Yeah.
In any way, well, shape, or fashion for anybody involved.
So, thank you for your call, Francis.
I'm a tremendous change in how we do business, especially in the criminal justice system. But anyway, you guys stay cool.
Yes, you too. So I'm getting assailed on all lines about the bad quality of the call, and I apologize. I don't know if it's a bad connection on my end or not, but as I said, thank you all for putting up with that. Thank you all for putting up with that because I know it's been a difficult time. We are anticipating being back in the station, Cecil and I, not this Monday coming because it's 4th of July celebration, so we won't have more talk radio, but we will be in the station the following week, I expect, you know, as long as our HVAC system holds up and people keep getting their vaccination and sending in the cards so we can have our measured reopening. Thanks going out to Ty, our engineer. Thanks everyone who called. Thanks everybody who's thinking about how they're going to have a merciful and measured and just response to this whole situation. Thanks to my long-suffering co-host, people who just got dropped from the call. And we hope that you'll stay tuned to your community connection, KBOO Portland, especially this weekend because we will bring you the Waterfront Blues Festival for your summer enjoyment here on your community connection, KBOO Portland. Get you into the week.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is 8:59 a.m. Next up is Old Mole Variety Hour.
Radio. This is Kabaka Pyramid representing from Kingston, Jamaica. Baby Rock family, you don't know.